Welcome to the Draw.Good Podcast, your weekly dose of fantasy footy content.
And welcome to the Draft Doctors, talking AFL fantasy and Supercoach Draft all year round, dropping every Wednesday in the off-season. Whatever team you support, I hope you enjoyed watching the grand final. Sorry to GWS fans and congratulations to the Tiger fans listening in. But now that real football is over, we can fully concentrate our efforts on the superior football, which is, of course, fantasy football. And this week on the show, we'll be talking overachievers. Players who excelled in 2019, but who we think could be regression candidates for 2020. Players highlighted last year included Rory Laird. Shout out to Stevie Fizz for that one. We also had Justin Westhoff and Tom Hawkins, just to name a few of the overachievers outlined last year that did indeed regress in 2019. Hopefully we can nail a couple more on this year's show. And to help find those 2019 overachievers is Jono Crockett. Welcome, mate.
G'day, Doc. G'day, listeners. I'm a bit like you, slightly hungover, having my first big drink in a good few months, actually. Been off the grog, so feeling worse for wear, but looking forward to talking overachievers, and hopefully we can get some content for the You Suck show for next year.
Definitely, and I hope my voice isn't too seedy as well. I'm definitely having those feels as well. Cam McLaughlin joins us as well. G'day, mate. How are you?
Yeah, good, mate. Polished off about eight beers as the that's probably a record for me in a grand final, while GWS were going down by about the equivalent of 80 points. So, you know, I feel like it evened out.
Definitely. And rounding out the show this week, fresh off a day on the Pinos, it's the Statesman. Welcome to you.
No Pinos for me, just a bit of green tea, a nice salad, a bit of work while the footy was in the background, but I didn't miss much.
Definitely not. On to our overachievers, players who tore it to shreds in 2019, but that we think could be in for some regression in 2020. Your first player, Jono.
Yeah, first player I'm going to talk about is my favourite redhead of all time, is a two-time premiership player, and that's Nick Vlosten. He had a career year this year with a 91 average in Supercoach and 78 in AFL Fantasy, but if you looked at his numbers in previous years, he's only just ticked over the 81s. In Supercoach, and he's barely got above the 70 in AFL Fantasy. Why did he go so well this year? Well, we saw Alex Rance go down with the ACL in round one, so the Richmond changed their defense up a little bit where they shared the load, so he was playing a bit more of as an interceptor in some games, as that Jaden Short rebounder in other games, so he upped his possessions by about 3 a game, and with Rance back next year, I can expect those possessions to come back, and that'll drop his averages again for next year. And, hey, if he starts doing that, then I'm back on the hate train for Nick Vlosten.
Awesome stuff. And he was pretty dominant in – was it Supercoach that you were looking at mostly for this one?
Or well,
is this,
both formats,
averaged
actually.
About 79? Yeah, both formats.
So Supercoach, he's around the 78-80 mark, and he went up to 91. AFL Fantasy, 67 to 70, and he was up at 78 this year. So big improvements just from 3 disposals a game, but you can quite easily lose those when Rancey comes back next year.
All right, anyone else got any thoughts on Nick Vlosten before we move on to the Statesman? Okay, on to the Statesman. What's your first pick?
Give the audience what they want, more Statesman time, which is fair enough. My first regression and therefore overachiever this year is Basher Hawley, keeping on that Richmond theme. These are his past four seasons. In 2016, 12 games for an average of 93.3. In 2017, 18 games for an average of 90.5. 2018, 13 games for an average of 73.9. And then he's had a career year in 2019 with 19 games and an average of 103.2. At an ADP of 106 this year, he turned out to be a sensational bargain pickup. 10th round for a D1. In fact, the third highest averaging defender this year and the fifth highest scoring defender despite missing 3 games. Will he regress and why will he? He turns 32 in May next year, and this is on the back of a banner year by 10 points in his 5 seasons since he's played a full year. So 2005, 6, 7, 8 and 9. He hasn't played a full year. And he's averaged 15 games in the past four seasons. Will continue to obviously be an injury risk. So that's one of the key factors here. But lastly, and probably the most important, is his role. So without Jaden Short this year, he averaged 108 AFL fantasy points. With Jaden Short, he averaged 10 points less with 98. And the split is 10 games one way, 9 games the other. If his body does stay right, he's likely to regress to a low 90s average. If the soft tissue injuries continue, then I would assume that he'll get closer to his career average of mid-80s. So Basher Hawley, banner year this year. I just can't see it being repeated.
Yeah, and I mean, I believed, I thought Jaden Short was potentially going to have a much better year, well, definitely, than he had this year, majorly due to those injuries that he had. But I remember looking at some articles in the preseason as well about who took the most kick-ins, and it was sort of like Jaden Short was right up there as well as Basher Hawley. And I think, you know, the kick-in rule has certainly been beneficial for Basher, would you say, Statesman? And if Jaden Short is taking a few of those kick-ins, aside from just the natural regression as he gets a bit older, maybe misses a few more games with injury, do you think the kick-ins as well could take just a couple off if Jaden Short's taking a few more of those during the year?
Oh, absolutely. And that's the 10-point difference he had with Jaden Short playing. There's no doubt. So I've sort of been a person that's avoided Basher, and people that picked him up got a ripper pick up this year. There is no doubt about it. I just can't see him repeating that type of effort. If Jaden Short and a couple of others were injured and he had that role all the time, I'd say yes, he's going to have some really big games. But I also thought at the back end of the season, there was the likelihood that he was going to get attention as well. So even if he does get that role where he's freed up, probably attention's going to go to him because he's proved to be a very important player for him.
We've seen the Tigers 3 years ago, we knew them as a hopeless fantasy scoring team. Do you think now that they've won the flag, they evolve again to change the game plan because people now know what they're going to produce and maybe tinker with it differently, or you think they run with it the same until someone really falters it like Collingwood did in the prelim last year?
It's a really good question. And to be honest, I don't really know the answer because with exception of Basher and Dusty in the second half of the year, started very slow but finished off very well, especially as soon as he got the forward status in the competitions where you can change your role. But look, I still think they're a team that play very much as team first rather than the individuals. Mm-hmm. And I think that hurts with fantasy options. It's really only draft where they become quite relevant because you still get a lot of players averaging in those 80s and 90s. But, look, I just don't see him getting over a ton again. He's done it once in his career when he was 31.
All right, I'll get on to my first player, and it's Rowan Marshall. So he averaged 99 AFL fantasy points and 110 Supercoach points in 2019, way outperforming his ADP of 189, according to Ultimate Footy. Fantastic season, grabbed that number one ruck mantle and broke out in a huge way. Marshall boosted his AFL fantasy average by 29 points and his Supercoach average by almost 50 points. His disposals went from 13 up to 18. Tackles from 2.3 to 3.6. His marks did dip a bit from 5.6 to 4.2. But of course, aside from the disposals, the big game changer was the hitouts, which went from 9.4 a game to 28.4. So the major reason the boy from Portland is in my overachievers for 2019 is due to the arrival of Paddy Ryder at the Saints in 2020, which was announced last week. Even if we assume Marshall is still the primary ruckman, we have to consider that Ryder has been signed for a reason, and that reason is to boost the Saints' dismal hitouts count, which was third worst in the league in 2019, ahead of only Sydney and the Western Bulldogs. Adding to that concern is the fact that Saints appear to be losing Josh Bruce in the trade period as well after he requested a trade to the Western Bulldogs. He was a major part of the forward line and they'll have to find a way to replace those 36 goals he kicked this year, and that could mean more Marshall up forward. I'll just be wary of drafting Marshall too early in 2020 and I'll be expecting around a 5 to 10 point dip in AFL fantasy production for next season. I'm not as around Supercoach as Jono and Stevie are, so I'll maybe get Jono's comment on that in a moment. But I'm expecting a reasonable drop in hitouts and a slight dip in disposals and tackles with more forward time likely on the cards. The question mark for this is the role, mainly because I just think Paddy Ryder's going to have significant time in the ruck. Otherwise, why else would they get him? In the end, it's going to be Ratten's game plan that ultimately decides Marshall's fate in 2020. I'll get you guys' thoughts on Rowan Marshall for next year.
I think you're spot on with this one, to be honest. And I think St Kilda see Rowan Marshall as a forward ruck, not a ruck forward. And I think that come very clear this year. And I think they were talking about a lot of his good work around the ground, but they weren't getting the best out of the centre clearances from potential dominant ruckman with their sort of youngish midfield going through. So there's no doubt that the change of Josh Bruce and Paddy Ryder is all about creating that Rowan Marshall is a key forward, but he's the one that's going to continue to get some time in the ruck, but not as much as what we hoped for. For keeper players, he's one to trade out before it's a bit too hot. Stevie Fizz had him in our keeper. He dropped him, so didn't keep him in his retention. He would have been kicking himself all year, but the reality is he's not a long-term keeper, I wouldn't think.
Yes, interesting, I suppose. And with him, he's going to be a pure ruck to start next year as well, would you say? Or would you think... He's just going to be a pure ruck. So it's going to be even more tricky as to where to draft him, and I think in a lot of leagues that I'll be in, I think that he'll be going too early for where I'm going to want to draft him, I think, unfortunately.
He may be one of those players that starts as a ruck, builds the forward ruck status early mid-year, but if there's an injury and then he becomes a full-time ruck again, he's going to kill it for you for the second half. So he's one to sort of keep hanging around and just watching what happens, because he might be able to pump you out some big games, especially if Paddy Ryder misses two or three in a row.
Yep. All right, Cam, do you want to take us through your first overachiever for 2019?
Yeah, absolutely. So I thought I'd just go right to the sty at the start and go with Tom Rockliffe. For my first one, coming into this year, everyone was pretty darn excited for what he could produce, coming off a near full preseason, and even, you know, Ken Hinckley was getting around the pig nickname, which got me a little bit more excited that, you know, the players and the coach were adopting it, and maybe it would translate onto the field. During JLT, he produced vintage numbers, just went absolutely massive, and again, I was just frothing to get him in all teams that I could possibly get him in, which actually led to him going, I think a lot of people had similar thoughts, right? His ADP was quite high, considering all of the risks for Rocky going into the year as well. He still managed 4 scores over 130, and that included 3 over 150 in the AFL fantasy format, but he ended the season with an average of 99.3 and 91 in Supercoach, right? So you start to look into that and think, well, how did that happen? And it's pretty much a result of the tail end of the season where he really struggled to get a decent score. Looking more into the last 4 games, and he averaged 69. So this is through your finals period. Nice. But geez, that might be the nicest time to pull your hair out, because that's right through the grand final, right, of your fantasy period. So he's averaged 69 through those last games and 73 Supercoach. And no surprises here, but it coincided with Ollie Wines being back in the team. So there was a little bit of a change in role for Rocky then. So, you know, I'm unsure how they're actually going to deploy their mid in 2020. And I honestly don't even think Ken Hinckley knows that just yet. But you have to think that he's maybe going to see a change in role that may not be beneficial given his more advanced age than the young group that they've got coming through. And for those that aren't aware, he's undergone another shoulder reconstruction. So he's mentioned that he's aiming to get his shoulder right in time for the first game of the year, but he'll be coming into the year with a very, very limited preseason. And I just can't see Ken Hinckley throwing an undercooked pig an influential role in that mid.
The one beneficial part for him is being a shoulder. It's not going to stop you running. but it will stop the contact work. But look, it's one of those players. I just hate to own him in a keeper.
Yeah, imagine owning him in a keeper. That would just be ruthless, right, Doss?
Yeah, right. And nobody, especially when nobody actually wants to buy him anymore. Apparently, the new pig smell has worn off for Tom Rockliffe, because he's certainly... I think there is this... There could be the potential, though, that you get yourself a bargain if he actually does bounce back somehow in 2020. I mean, we've seen if he goes on the Travis Boak off-season program, maybe he can have a huge bounce back this year, even at age 29. So... it will be interesting to see how he goes, but it's...
Doss, that's the worst sales pitch
I've ever heard. I'll trade him for Braden Sire, how about that? And fill in for free.
The question is, and maybe we go around the panel here, what round does he actually start to become attractive for you? So look at a redraft league. What round does it, that little trigger point of going, ooh, Rocky's still there, and what happens if... He does get the right role. He does get the right amount of time in the guts and his body as well.
I'd throw him out at round 14, 15, just throw a line. That could be your M5, M6, depending on how you've drafted already, but I'd be taking a bite at that, because you could be getting Angus Brayshaw, Gus Brayshaw at the same time then as well.
I'd be looking at... I'd draft him where I was comfortable with him getting 85 in the mid and, you know, be super happy if he gets 100.
Yeah, so I think what we're saying, though, Cam, you're just basically worried about his role and a bit about his health and how he'll start the season. Because, I mean, when he's in the role, he's still going to score. So if we see him in a nice role, even in, say, a JLT game, hopefully, you know, they've got a reasonable full squad, which usually doesn't happen. But if you see him in a nice role, will you be willing to go a little bit earlier based on, you know, what we know he can do when he's in a nice role?
No, not at all. And actually, you know, I'm bringing back my do not draft list, which I know that Steve and I think the rest of you guys don't have a do not draft list going into the year, but he will be firmly on my do not draft list for 2020. The risk isn't worth the reward, I don't think.
There's going to be a coach in every league that gets excited if he's still there at round 8.
Toss. Need a captain, I'll take him.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
Way too early.
All right, before we get to our second player, we'll just touch on our iTunes target, which we've set now at 250 for the Statesman. Now, there's just been one idea that's been thrown out there, and I don't fully agree with this, but we have been, the Statesman's pretty happy to do it, but I mean, I'm happy for the listeners to throw some more ideas out there that are, you know, maybe a bit better than this one, but we got Big Cox sent in this one, I believe.
Is it because it's taken the piss out of you, Doss?
Well, I've copped a bit of that lately, actually. I don't know what's going on with the listeners. I think Stato's starting an army against me. But anyway, this is the idea. It's the Statesman will change his tact in drafting for the Listener League keeper and take up my theory, apparently, of drafting only players that are 22 and under. He says, we will record the draft just to see how I manage... Is that you? You manage this whilst drinking a bottle of cheap wine that has been left in the car for a week. So that's the idea. You're going to be drafting with my strategies, which, you know, they aren't my strategies, but apparently they're my strategies, and drafting 22 and under for the Keeper League, which you've just taken out the flag, of course, which we hear about all the time. And you're going to be drinking cheap wine.
So. Now, just to verify that you missed the draft, but you had your pre-selection lists there, and because people are actually live, they're picking the best picks, which left you picking up a whole selection of 19, 20, and 21-year-olds, which agreed was not probably the way you would have drafted. But seeing I take the mickey out of you, then a listener thought, well, why don't we ruin Statesman's year? I've already got pick 12. So if you can imagine how I'm going to, with a limitation of how old the players are going to be, try and manage that. So I thought if we actually record the draft live, we've done this before, and Steve and I recorded one. It was actually ended up being a really good pod. But imagine me doing that, well, half tanked with the cheap wine, but you guys relying back to me of, okay, so you've got Travis Boak, you've got Tom Rockliffe, you've got Bashir Hooley all available, but I only can pick a player up that's 21, hasn't played a game.
You get the Darcy Fogarty.
It's not the worst idea. Yeah, I think we might be able to find something else though. I'm just still throwing it out there for the listeners. But that's going to happen if we hit our iTunes target of 250 ratings. Jono, what are we at the moment? And you've still got to do your one, which we set the target at 230 ratings for you to be smashing some peanut butter in your face.
Yep, 231 we are at. If everything goes to plan, Friday will be filmed, and then we can get it up on right. the socials and go from there, see what it's all about.
And you settled on, was it 7 tubs to get the job done?
I think 7, but, you know, I'm only a short walk to a supermarket, so can always add to
Why
it.
Why don't you just get one big one?
Yeah, but I just have to go to Costco, and I'm not a member anymore.
All right, well, let's get on to our second player in our overachievers for 2019. And Jono, take it away, your second player that you've got for us.
Yeah, so my second player is actually Josh Dunkley. Now, this year he went 116 in Supercoach and 111 in AFL Fantasy. But when we looked at it, we saw halfway through the year when Libba was injured, it was Dunkley, McRae, and Bontempelli, and they all averaged well. McRae was 123, Bont 114. And Dunkley 116. I don't know if that's going to be sustainable for Josh Dunkley when Libba comes back, because when we saw that, his scores were really affected where he wasn't getting those big 130 pluses that we saw throughout the year. He was more tempered down to 104 to 105 where, yeah, he's going to regress, but it's not going to be a massive regression where he's undraftable. It's going to be about 100, 105 range for me. So people are going to go, oh, yeah, 116, he's going to kill it again. He won't. He got the extra seven. He got the bump through 7 extra disposals this year. But also, he can play as a mid-sized forward. Now, the Doggies are getting Josh Bruce this year. They've had Norton, and they also had Shacky. So Norton will probably go back. Josh Dunkley, I think, could play as that mid-sized forward who's a great contested mark. So he, with Libra in that team, he could spend a little bit more time in the forward line. So people just temper expectations for Josh Dunkley in 2020.
This could end up being I like your logic. This could be a bit of a hot take, though, Jono, I've got to say.
I agree.
It could be a monstrous hot take. I'll just go through the numbers for their the pre and post buys for some of those three Dogs midfielders you're talking about. Now, I will say your Liberatore comment is taken into account, though. So Jack McRae, 101 pre-buy, 130 post-buy.
Yep.
Bontempelli, 103 pre-buy, 106 post-buy. Josh Dunkley, 95.6 pre-buy, 126.5 post-buy. And you don't think he'll be able to sustain not even like a 116? I mean, that is a huge score. I do admit.
That is,
but
huge
you're
score.
Saying more yeah. of a 100 to 105 sort of.
I think 105 will be about right. Especially with
wow. I'm so planning already for the hashtag off brand. I had him and McRae probably in my starting because overall of what they can achieve, I thought they were going to be undervalued. So thinking on picking up two absolute lock keepers from the start at a value price, even though they're going to be still quite expensive. And my logic with that is, there's a period this year where Western Bulldogs look like a premiership threat. Mm. And when they did that and their run into that finals period was with three main midfielders. Now, if I was the coach looking at that, viewing that, that's what I'm doing. And then the likelihood of who's getting the tags, well, it's Bont 1 and Bont 2 and Bont 3 and maybe McRae 4.
Well, I don't see Dunkley ever getting the tag, but I can see him potentially spending more time up forward as well, which rotates him out of that midfield more.
I'm not saying you're wrong, but that was the way I was viewing it. Mm. You're a Bulldogs man, you know, more than me, to be honest. But, wow, I'm probably a little bit down on that one too.
Just take the jam out of everyone's donuts, no worries.
Yeah, get some peanut butter in your face, mate.
Well, you won't be drafting him in 2020 then, it sounds like it, Johnny, because he'll be going well before when
well,
you're
that's
willing
the thing.
To take
talking
him.
To people at our, you know, just talking people fantasy after the real footy's finished, they're all high on Josh Dunkley, but they're like, yeah, I'm going to take him round one or two, but I can see it being thrown back in their faces. And if that's the case, then there's going to be other options for me to take who are more established, who I know are going to be better.
So you think, though, with, like we talked about the back half of the year, how they were actually successful and did actually look like they were steaming home at the end of the year, you think that they're going to revert to doing something by putting Libba straight back in there, or even maybe your boy that you've talked about a few times, maybe like a Mitch Wallace, or they're going to mix it up compared to the successful formula on the back half of the year just based on the personnel?
But when we did those CBAs and Libba was in the team, Dunkley was the one to come out for Libba. So depending on what Luke Beveridge is going to do next year, he was the guy who was getting the last mid time when Liberatore was in that team. So therefore, yeah, it's going to affect his scoring ability.
Okay. Just due to that ability to be that medium-sized forward, like you said. Interesting stuff. Could be a hot take. Could be your greatest call you're going to make for 2020, Jono. We'll have to wait and see on that. All right, the Statesman, take us through your final overachiever for 2019.
Yes, Travis Boak, another player turning 32 this year, and again with a banner season. Averaged 105.6, but this is his one and only time that he has ever averaged over the ton. Ended up as the third highest scoring forward, and with an ADP of 74, was great value for those that drafted him this year. He has been very reliable in playing at least 21 games in the past seven seasons. So why will he regress next year? Well, first and foremost, he's going to go down the draft order from expectations, purely and simply because he's going to be a mid only. But as we saw at the second half of the year, his role started to convert. So he started actually sharing a bit of time. Key thing here, and it was mentioned before with another player, but his average with Ollie Wines in the team was 100.6. Without Ollie Wines was 111.2. That's a major difference. In other words, he'll be buying Ollie some water skis for Christmas this year. His four best seasons before this was 2013, he averaged 100 flat. In 2015, he averaged 96.1. In 2014, he averaged 95.2. And 2010, so yes, a decade ago, he averaged 94.9. A good year for him next year would see a mid-90s average, which is around that mark of his top two or three years. At least 10 points down.
Yeah, he's kind of a guy that I think shocked many, many people this year. But, I mean, he was also a guy that, if you looked at the who was going to be playing midfield, he was sort of the standout guy that was noticed by smart coaches out there. And the fact he had the forward status this year as well was a major help. But pure mid next year and potential regression, it's going to be one that's going to be scary on draft day to be picking up Travis Boak. Has anyone got any more thoughts on Boak?
Yeah, just I was looking at his heat maps for the last sort of four games just when Ollie came into the team, and I'd suggest looking at that as where he'll probably play for the rest of the year. No, sorry, for the start of the year next year. And it's a split between about 50% wing time and 50% forward time. So they actually moved him out of the guts,
yep,
right to that wing and forward. So I wouldn't put it past him to get that dual position status early in the year. And then, you know, if there's an injury in that midfield, maybe you get a little bit lucky. But, yeah, Statesman, bang on.
And you also got to remember when he was playing that forward role, he was actually averaging in the 80s, not in the 90s. It was only when he was a mid, he was in the 90s.
Correct. And it even went low. He had a stinker towards the end. So, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Travis Boak, overachiever for 2019, according to the Statesman. I've got my final one here, and it is Jake Lloyd I've gone with.
Ooh.
Just got to follow up Jono's hot take with my own fire.
Oh, can I say this?
Statesman looks offended.
No, he looks offended. I've got no doubt where this is going, and I think it's fair, but I will say he's only brought up this name only because he can bring in one of his boys into the conversation.
Oh, yeah.
Am I right?
He might come up a little bit, I will say. But no, the logic behind this one is just similar to last year's Rory Laird call. So I'm basically just purely looking at AFL fantasy numbers for these stats as well, just not the super coach. But Lloyd was the second highest averaging defender for AFL fantasy in 2019 and the highest for total points. Lloyd averaged 114.6 AFL fantasy points before the Swans bye in round 13. Afterwards, he dropped down to a still solid 98.1 points for the final 10 games of the season, including a 92.4 average for his final five games. During this back half of the year, we saw the Swans occasionally experimenting with playing Lloyd a little bit on the wing at times, and as noted by yourself, the Statesman, at the time when this was happening, Jordan Dawson was deployed at times, my boy, as a floating spare in the back line. Also, Steve's boy, he always brings that up. That may have impacted Lloyd's scoring late in the season as well. I think the disposal numbers are just not sustainable, and with the Swans really not having a whole heap of weapons as they go into what I'd call a little partial rebuild, I think we'll see more attention going to Lloyd in 2020. He copped a forward tag by Gold Coast's Brad Shear early in their round 15 matchup, and he really struggled to build his numbers in that game, just the 16 disposals and 48 fantasy points. And just looking at Rory Laird's scoring build of 2018 against his 2019 season, that's where I sort of see Lloyd doing a similar dip as well. So Laird went from 32.2 disposals last year to 28.3 this year, 6.2 marks to 5.7, and Laird's tackle numbers remained similar in that year. It was just his slight dip in disposal, thanks in part to having that career year in 2018, together with the returning Brody Smith impacting his scoring in 2019. So that's the difference. I don't know if there's going to be that player. Is it Jordan Dawson that's going to be racking up a bit more in the back line next year, or is he going to be playing forward or mid? He's done a bit of both. Or someone else that we haven't seen come in the trade period. With Lloyd, he had similarly monstrous career high numbers in 2019. He averaged nearly 31 disposals and 6 marks, with 34 or more disposals in 9 games, including 2 games with over 40 touches. He notched 9 or more marks on 7 occasions, but none of those games occurred after the Swans' round 13 bye. Obviously, he's got that monstrous kick-to-handball ratio, and he's still going to put you up D1 numbers, but I'm just going to be wary of a potential 5 to 10 point dip, just the expectation that just the disposals and mark numbers just probably aren't sustainable for 2020. What are your thoughts on this bit of fire?
Doss, when did you say Dawson was playing that role? What rounds was that?
It was later in the year. I think the Statesman, you pointed it out.
Just after the buys, a couple of rounds, weeks after the buys.
So,
I don't know if, I'm not, I mean, I agree that he'll probably see a bit of a dip, but I don't think it'll be 10 points just because, and I wouldn't be playing Dawson there anyway, just from purely from a win-loss perspective, right? So after the buy, they won 2 games.
Yeah.
So, you know, they definitely probably tried it. They pushed Jake Lloyd up, but lost to the Bombers, lost to the Blues, lost to the Dockers, lost to the Cats, lost to the Giants, lost to the Power, beat the Demons. You know, I don't think necessarily that they play better footy when he's on the wing.
Yeah, I probably agree with that. I just wonder, like, I'm just looking at, you know, the amount of disposals he had this year sort of to me smells a bit like a career year. And if he gets more attention as well, like I said, I just think a couple less disposals, maybe a less mark or slightly less marks, I just think it's not going to be 107 that we see him get again. And by the way, I'm bloody love Jake Lloyd. I think he's a brilliant player and love him for fantasy. I just don't know if 107 is what you can really expect out of him next year. Maybe more like a 102, maybe a little bit less. What do you think, Statesman? Being a Sydney
man. I think it's a bit of a changing of the guard, I think, happens next year. But who that is a little bit unknown at this stage. If certainly I was running the system, I'd be putting Dawson in the midfield, to be quite honest with you. Devastating kick, and they're the type you want, especially if you've got a pretty decent forward line, which you're expected to have. But we've been talking for years on Heaney and Mills, when are they going to get midfield time, whether that actually happens, and Mills actually found himself being a key position player for a bit of that second half of the year. So I think there will be some changes. It's really a preseason watch for that club, to be honest.
Yep. Of course, Rhino Clark as well. Don't forget Big Rhino doing big damage in 2020. All right, Cam, maybe
never
get to your
again.
Final player, Cam, your last Jeez. Overachiever for the pod.
Ryan Clark.
He's on an AFL list. He's already overachieved.
He's like Paddy Dow. An average of 40 was overachieved.
No, last pick is Caleb Daniel. So he, I think in a lot of leagues, would have gone completely undrafted. He didn't mind. And he came into the year listed exclusively as a forward. And his ADP was actually 166 on Ultimate Footy. But going into the year, he was playing that forward role, but he ended up switching quite early to a key, you know, defense, you know, mover of the ball. And really, either way you look at it, if you drafted him or if you picked him up off the waiver, you got an absolute bargain because he started the season on absolute hot fire with a bunch of tons in both formats and finished the season averaging 93.7 AFL Fantasy and 99 Supercoach. But then in round 15, everything changed. And so what actually happened there? An ex-Hawk, Taylor DeRay, swooped in and started getting games when Hayden Crozier went down injured. When Crozier came back, DeRay actually managed to stay in the team, and Caleb Daniel found himself spending more time on the wing. His average from round 14 was 81 in AFL Fantasy and 85.5 in Supercoach, and I think that's probably where I see his average sitting about next year. I think he still will get some defense.
Was one of those games injury affected?
The last game was injury affected, and if my memory serves me correctly, for Supercoach, he ended up with a 88 and an 84.
Okay, so he played most of the game then.
Yeah, correct. I think he'll probably average about 81 in AFL Fantasy and 85.5 in Supercoach. I think what'll be great is that he'll keep the defender status, so that puts him in a pretty good tier for a defender. And there'll be people who see the average and remember his score for the first half of the year and go really early, thinking they're going to get, you know, a potential primo defender, whereas you'll be able to sit back and maybe let someone else have him.
I'm unsure if he's someone, like, I know your logic there as well, but Caleb Daniel led their rebound 50s, and this is, he missed a bunch of games too. He had 101 rebound 50s. The next best player was 78 for Crozier. So I'd still think that they're going to look to get the ball in his hands quite a lot. And he's not someone that can build his score based on a lot of other the stats. It's literally just going to be your disposals. But I still think they're going to really be looking to use him quite a lot coming out of defense. I wonder what your opinion is, Statesman.
Yeah, I actually traded him out when he was high, thinking that this wasn't a sustainable thing, to be honest. I think he had a really good first half of the year. I think his deficiencies were exposed certain times. So in defence, when the team's going well, his use of the ball's quite clever. But, yeah, I think there's some issues with his game that will constantly be there. They did like him on the halfback flank, but as Cam correctly pointed out, when they got a couple of players that were travelling well, all of a sudden he wasn't used there anymore.
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah, I did notice that I was wondering your opinion because I saw you traded him out last year and you were trying to float him around quite a bit, but that's interesting. You were just using the value of him at his highest, not based on a real you weren't too concerned going forward that he's still going to score okay, just not to that immense level that he did earlier in the year. All right, well, that was the overachievers. Just a reminder, we go year round. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss a show. In particular, we've got the You Suck show coming up very soon. So if you haven't heard that one before, we give you a highlight reel of all our worst calls for the year. It's my debut this season, so yeah, really looking forward to that. Don't forget as well to check out the Draft Doctors website. We've still got stuff going on there, plenty going on. And if you missed the 22 Under 22 show, go check out Stato's full list on the website. That's a great companion to the pod that we released now a few weeks ago, and terrific insight for keeper coaches. We'll get on to some questions from social media now, and this is at the Draft Doctors on Twitter. You can also follow us on Instagram and Facebook. But this comes from We Got Big Cox. He's got so many questions. He says, I'm an owner and worried about Warps regressing with Titch back. Who regresses from the GWS mids when Ward comes back? Okay, we'll go question by question. He's got four questions. So first one, I'm an owner and worried about Warps regressing with Titch back. Let's answer that one first.
I too am an owner and not worried at all about the regression. I actually think he'll improve next year, and Hendo will be my regression candidate for the Hawks.
Concur.
He plays for free, I know.
Who regresses from the GWS mids when Ward comes back? And he's hoping, praying that it's not Hopper.
It's Hopper.
It's Hopper.
It's Hopper. Yeah, Timmy Taranto.
It was outstanding.
I think people.
Final.
Yeah, and I think, and it was their best mid during the whole finals. Only playing his third year, he's not going to be pushed out of there. Green and Williams will go back to their forward and back roles. Cogs can actually play a bit up forward. I'm unsure. It's always a question mark when you come back from an ACL, so talking about Ward, of what type of role he's going to get.
I think he becomes
a bit more of a support role than a leading role. He's aging and coming back from ACL. So I don't see – only injury will take Timmy Taranto out. Kelly, Whitfield are fine. And then you'll have a rotation of bit players. But the one that might get hurt a bit will be Hopper.
Interesting. I actually nearly thought about doing the gun, Toby Green, in one of these segments, but just because of that stretch where he played mid and was averaging like 140 over about five or six games, that was one that sort of came to mind for me. But then I saw his other games with a few injuries sort of thing, and it almost evens out a little bit. But I do think he's one that's going to drop a little bit as a forward, though, not in the midfield that he's talking about there. He's still going to be eligible as a forward. All right, this one. Who drops out of the Doggies mid when Libba forces his way back in? So we just spoke about that a little bit, and Jono believes it's probably going to be a little bit of the Dunks.
Oh, poor Dunks.
I mean, why does Libba get back in?
Because that's the only position he can play.
I agree.
And Bevo loves him.
Yeah, I find it so weird. Like, I find it really hard to believe that he can make his way back into the team because he's not as good as their existing midfield.
That's true, but...
And if he can't play anywhere else, then what are you doing?
That's the thing. He will get a game because Bevo loves him and he can only play midfield. So that's where Josh Dunkley will unfortunately have to go spend time some forward.
I mean,
I don't like it, but
that's, it might mean a bit of a variety of roles from Bailey Smith too.
He was out of that midfield anyway.
He got less
midfield time throughout the year.
Yeah. So, I mean, he could be one.
Let's keep speaking about 60 averaging mids. Yeah, it's a good pod.
69. Nice.
He asks, does lunch meat coming back, so Devin Smith coming back into the Essendon lineup, impact Parrish?
My answer straight away is no, but I think there's a couple of things that we need to be thinking about here is obviously they've got a succession plan. And I would suggest that whatever's happening with that succession plan, there will be some changes of how it's structured as early as next year. So it's a big preseason watch. My thoughts are Heppel's the one that changes and looking towards that sort of bit of leadership in that sort of half-back line. So
what he was originally
him
there
being
for.
solid and smart while you've got the pacey ones around him. So you have the key position, the two Pacey and Heppel in the half-back line, and that's just looking at it logically. So I wouldn't have thought that it affects Parrish. I think you want to give him more time and continue to increase his role. And I think Lunchmeat will be forward and mid like he was.
Okay, and these are some more questions. This comes from Alex Thornhill. So we spoke a little bit about it before. He wants to know the impact on GWS mids with Ward and Cogs back as well, but he wants to know especially on Toby Green. I did touch on it, but Statesman, you've been a massive fan of this guy, so maybe talk about Toby Green for next year.
If everyone's fully fit, then he predominantly plays forward with a bit of time in the mid through the rotations, but just as a forward previously, he's averaged 90, so if they're going to have a good year, which probably means a few more players on the park than they did this year, he's still got the chance to be a 90 averaging forward and playing predominantly forward.
The impact of Tim Kelly if he goes to West Coast or Freo. Maybe Cam, your take on this one?
By Jack Redden.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's probably right. I mean, well, they did get Marston's gone, right? So they've already freed up a spot for him. And he may end up pushing one of them insides to the outside. I'd suggest Tim Kelly plays his, does his best work on the inside as seen this year. I mean, I'd be more inclined to have a look at the Cats, as I probably would, right?
But yeah,
I think it gives a good opportunity for someone like a Charlie Constable, who maybe didn't get as much of an opportunity if he stays at the club. From West Coast's perspective, I think you'll probably see Tim Kelly slide a bit in average because there's a little bit more competition for ball with Shuey, with Gaff, with Yo. I think they are high disposal getters versus at the Cats, it's a bit more of a low disposal mid.
But Kelly can have an impact with 25 and one or two goals, though. He can still score
well. Exactly. Yeah, correct. Especially in the Super Coach format, right? Yeah.
And there's a few aging in that midfield as well. So you've got to think that, that Redden's 29 going 30, Shuey's 29 going 30 as well. So it's a bit of succession planning. And I think just for all the listeners, we'll be doing a couple of podcasts reviewing the trade timing as well and what the impacts are, because a lot of these questions are based if something's going to happen. Mm. So discussing Constable when there's possibly one midfielder going out and three coming in, it's a bit tough. But we'll go through that once we know what's happened with the trade period and the free agency period.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, one of my guys on this podcast was exactly to do with somebody already coming in with Paddy Ryder being announced, so that sort of stuff just has huge impact. All right, this final question here from Alex. He says, how badly does Ricky Henderson fall off a cliff next year?
Cam. Pretty badly.
You know that scene in Billy Madison with O'Doyle Rules and they just drive straight up? That's Ricky Henderson's car in 2020.
I was thinking more Homer down the Springfield Ravine. After he jumps the cliff.
I thought you were talking about what about this rack scene. We do have a question from Russ as well. Prestia had about a 15-point bump compared to his previous two seasons. Do you think he can maintain it?
Yes.
I would suggest that the two seasons previously were the ones that were injury affected, took a slow build for Richmond. He's playing at his best now. I think he can only get better, but on the fact of scoring, I reckon as long as he's not injured, it's par.
Was his first preseason at Richmond this year?
Yeah.
What do you reckon about? I think we saw something pretty interesting in the grand final. Like one of the only interesting things in the grand final was De Boer going to Prestia, and his second half was he basically wasn't seen. If he's going to be that dominant midfielder in the team with Dusty sitting more forward, I think there's a case to say that Prestia cops more attention next year and maybe regresses a little bit as well.
I would pose this, and it's something that I heard in the pre-match, and I think it was Kane Corns talking about this, but his question was, if Prestia gets 30 possessions, you can still win. If Dusty gets 30 possessions, you ain't going to win. So what happened when Presti got cut out of the game in the second half? Did that slow down Richmond?
No, it really
quickened them up. So there's your answer. There's your answer.
Yeah. Hey, Statesman, I've seen a few people sort of messaging around the place about Marlon Pickett from the grand final. What were your thoughts on him, maybe from a like keeper perspective, say?
Yeah, I rate it. It all depends what type of longer-term role he has, to be honest. 27, so next year he'd be 28. But I think that if he gets a really good pre-season under him, because remember, he actually missed half the season this year and hasn't been in the AFL system and has come in and played like that on the biggest stage, there's some potential, some big potential.
I think there's definitely potential there, right? But he may still... I can see a world where he doesn't play round one.
Yep.
Like Jack Graham, Jack Ross, I think very Rance, unlucky to miss. Cannon Higgins, McIntosh, if he comes back in. Unlucky. Rance, I think Higgins is missing 2020. Okay. But yeah, I'd suggest he's not a locked on, not a locked deal yet.
I think this goes back to the trade because they're already talking about Ellis being gone, but you don't know who else fringe departs there because quite a few did. Last year, like Miles, etc. So there will be a few that go and look for greener pastures or the pay packet or the retirement, superannuation, all those type of things. We'll see what comes out of that to see how many positions. But they have got some quality coming through because you've just listed some high-quality players that weren't playing in the grand final.
Okay, thanks for listening to The Draft Doctors. Subscribe, stay tuned to the website and leave a rating and review. Enjoy the 800 hours of Trade Radio over the next few weeks and be sure to mix it up with us here at The Draft Doctors. Above all, enjoy the fantasy off-season. It's just starting to heat up. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to The Draft Doctors podcast. For more tips and in-depth analysis, head over to thedraftdoctors.com.au.